Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Section 10 podcast. Here are your hosts, Jared Carabas, Pete Blackburn, and Steve Perrault.
What's up, and welcome back to the Section 10 podcast, episode 122, presented by Barstool Sports. It is the home of your 77-61, barely in first place, Boston Red Sox. My name is Jared Carabas, and I am a certified G and a bona fide stud, and you can't teach that. And this right here, this is Pete Blackburn, and this is his ninth episode in a row, and you can't teach that. Bada boom. Realist guys in the room. Steve, how you doing?
What up? Section 10 in the building.
In the motherfucking building. Like I said, barely hanging on to that first place lead. And you know what? I'm not at the point of panic. I'm more at the point of irritation, I would say. And it's not with the team so much, it is with like some of the fans. I'm irritated with some of the fans because I think that, I don't know where we sort of turned into this group along the way. I blame Fever Pitch. I don't blame the 2004 Red Sox. I just blame, it definitely started during that era where there's just like this certain group of fans who think that you are like some spoiled piece of shit monster if you have any sort of negative take on the Red Sox, regardless of how well or poorly they are playing. So the Red Sox get swept by the Baltimore Orioles, not this past weekend, but the weekend before. And they go 1-for-23 with runners in scoring position in that series. Then they sweep the Blue Jays. Great. Who cares? They're a last place team. And then they go into the Bronx Thursday through Sunday, get their asses kicked 3 out of 4. And then they go 1-for-25 with runners in scoring position in that series. And then they come back to Fenway and Rick Porcello gives up 7 runs and they end up losing, what, 10-4? So they get smoked after the series against the Yankees. And now their lead is down to 2.5 games. And I tweeted something like, you know, it's less painful to have like a cinder block dropped on your balls from 40 feet in the air. And then I get all these people, like there's this Twitter account that's like, fuck the Boston media or something like that. It's like, oh yeah, typical Mazz Jr. ball. I was like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like, first of all, I'm not Boston media. Second of all, I'm a Red Sox fan. And if you're a Red Sox fan and you've been watching this team and you don't have something negative to say, you're a fucking pussy because you don't have the balls to call out your team. Like, you, come on, man, keep the faith. Someone tweeted that to me last night when Rick Porcello gave up the fucking bomb to make it 7-2. And I said, thanks for coming out. Now, come on, man, you got to keep the faith. Where's the spirit? Where's the rooting spirit in the Boston Red Sox? Shut the fuck up.
You should expect this. You should expect all kinds of reactions from a following that you'll draw in. That's surprising to you that you would get these chirpers?
It's surprising to me that if you are a fan invested in this team and you watch on a nightly basis and you see how good they can be, and then now you've seen how poorly they've played over the last couple of weeks here, how the fuck is your attitude, come on, man, keep the faith, man. You gotta just believe.
That's some shit that would have got your ass kicked at Fenway pre-2004. Like, if you were ever like, keep the faith, like a horde of Red Sox fans would just kick the shit out of you.
Good job. Good effort. Like
that was the moniker in 2004. Like, that was the whole, you know, keep the faith. Like, I get it. But with this team, I'm insulted if you compare them to the 2004 team. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, this team being compared to the 2004 team, it's just, you know, like I had, like someone else responded and said something like, oh, like I can't, what would your reaction be like if they weren't in first place? It's like, dude, just because they're in first place does not mean that you have to say nice things about them every single night. The way that they've been playing for this stretch of I think it's like 17 games now. As a fan, how can you watch them every single night and then they're arguably in their worst stretch of baseball of the entire year, and that's like you just have to say nice things because they're in first place? Like, that's not how this works. It's not how this works. And then you get looped in, you know, oh, you're Boston media and Boston media is negative. First of all, I live in New York. I'm not in that toxic environment anymore. This is just me as a fan speaking how I would, even if I didn't have a blog, a podcast, or whatever the fuck else that we have going on here. This is how I would be reacting if I had none of this. I would just be like, this team sucks right now. How is that not a fair take? It blows my mind.
Isn't this always present, though? I feel like that response to whatever you do is always going to be present. So I'm surprised we're hearing this now, because we've done this song and dance before. This isn't the first time that we've had specifically you chirping back at fans chirping at you about, you know, keep the faith, or like, oh, you're like Maz. But this isn't new. So why are we now pissed about it?
I mean, I just think that it's at this stage of the game. You know, you're in September, so like, and I still haven't said like, oh, season's over, they're not winning the division. Like, I don't have any of those like drastic over the top takes. I'm just saying this sucks to watch right now. That is a very fair take to have. It sucks to watch the Red Sox right now. It's not fun. Then you have people coming out of the woodwork being like, acting like I just said, season's over, they don't have a chance. No World Series. They'll barely make the playoffs. They'll be lucky to make the wild card. Like, that's like, those are actual takes that are going out there. Like, and people will throw that shit out there in like May. So if you want to come at someone for having a fucking negative take and being Maz Jr., that, like, there are plenty of people out there that fit that description, and I'm not one of them.
I'm getting mad because I've already seen people compare it to the 2011 collapse. Like, oh, it's going to be 2011 all over again. I can't stand that, because not only is it negative, but the fact that like this team is nowhere near as good as the 2011 team was. And that was like a historic collapse. And just like, no, at no point in this season was anybody like, the Red Sox are the best team in the league. 2011. Yeah,
that was,
now you would
they got off to a shitty start, but they were, I think the Herald had the front page cover that said best team ever before the season even started. Yeah,
right. Yeah.
Well, also that was the team of the summer. Like, that team dominated baseball all summer and then folded in September. But we had, I had just brought that up last week, that I think people want to compare it to 2011. Granted, we just enjoy, like, I think a lot of people enjoy failure. They enjoy watching things crash and burn. And I think a lot of people want to see this team not only lose the division, but somehow fall out of the playoff hunt, which it still wouldn't be like the craziest thing ever. They have like a 97% chance to make the playoffs, but I wouldn't be totally baffled if they're in like a wild card hunt the way they're playing right now. But yeah, I 2011 was going to happen regardless. People were going to say that the second they started to fold.
I mean, you mentioned
people
rooting for them to fail. It's because it's easier to talk about a team that stinks and when shit's going bad than it is to talk about a team that's doing well.
When everything is awesome, it's like, what do you even say? Like, oh, great game. Like, that doesn't really, you know, wet a lot of people's whistle. So I totally get that.
Yeah. And the other thing about the 2011 Red Sox is that they were literally the best team in baseball for like 3 months. The Red Sox had a stretch where they were, they were the best team in baseball for about 2 weeks. It was like after the trade deadline, for about 2 weeks after that, they had the best record in the majors. The 2011 Red Sox were the best team in the majors for like 3 months. But you know what the other thing about the 2011 Red Sox is, that what do you think their biggest lead in the division was, Steve?
Their biggest lead? 11?
Three.
They only led by 11. Who's the second place team that year?
I'm thinking their lead.
Like a postseason spot.
Yeah, I'm thinking their lead they had on the Rays for the fallback for the wild card. Yeah.
Yeah, they only had as the highest division lead that they had all year was three games, and they last held that on July 24th. So it wasn't even something that they kind of blew at the end. They blew just like the playoff spot. It was just like, you know, they were clinging to a playoff spot at the end there with I think they might have been like 11 games. It felt like 11 games that they blew at the end there. But yeah, there's no comparison between the 2017 Red Sox and the 2011 Red Sox. Like the September collapse, it was just huge in terms of what they had to blow that year and from where they came from. This 2017 Red Sox team, you know, you kind of just, you look at the rest of the pack, and going into the season, everyone expected the Cleveland Indians to be the team to beat because they had made it to Game 7 of the World Series. They went out and made additions that made them an even better team. The Red Sox, World Series favorites in Vegas because they went out and got Chris Sale. That was pretty much it. Like, no one was super excited about Mitch Moreland. Like, we made a joke about it. Like, the same week that they got Chris Sale, they also got Mitch Moreland. And we let off the podcast by being like, that's it. They got their guy. He's here. Finally, World Series. Mitch Moreland is a Boston Red Sox. Like, that was the intro to the show because no one was thinking about Mitch Moreland. But yeah, I think it comes down to the fact that you look at the Red Sox team, they've been hot, they've been cold. And their most consistent run of good baseball, the team that we expected to see, lasted for about 2 weeks, and it happened last month. And it took, like I said, it took them into August. Like, that was the first time that we saw how good this team could be. It took them until August. And then not only did they kind of just come back down to earth, they went fucking through the ground down through to China. Like, that's where they are right now.
I know there's a lot of topics that we could get to from the Yankees series, but the biggest thing to me is just the lack of life. It just seemed like kind of a lifeless team. It's like they just showed up to play some pickup ball. It didn't really feel like there was any playoff implications on the line.
No, you
know,
none.
The biggest thing that stuck out to me was Devers at third base. I know he's a kid. I know he's 12, but he fielded a ball with Brett Gardner running and just not having the knowledge that you got to get that thing over to first quickly with Gardner on the base paths, and he beats it out. He just legs out a normal ground ball single. It's like, wake up. Like, this team needs to be slapped in the face right now. It seems like we're watching them just sleepwalking. That's what it feels like.
They're in cruise control. And that's what I wrote about on Monday after the series was over, was that the Yankees played like a team that knew that they had to win that series. And the Red Sox played like a team that had already clinched the division. And I'm not a fire Farrell guy. I'm not a pro Farrell guy. I'm a, you know, who gives a fuck who's managing this team guy. But the Red Sox for two consecutive years now have sort of coasted at the end at the exact point in time where you're supposed to hit the gas.
Did you see Farrell with Mookie on Monday night in the dugout?
I saw your tweet. Yeah.
That was really awkward. They had, like, Farrell was kind of holding him in a very strange, kind of like a relative would do, and you're like, ah, get off me, ah, stop, this is awkward. And he was doing that with Mookie, and you could tell Mookie wanted nothing to do with it. I know somebody had replied like that Mookie was avoiding eye contact. He really was. Body language is a lot. We can look into things a little, you know, too much sometimes, but that actually kind of said a lot to me, that when Farrell actually tries to go over to talk to Mookie, he really didn't seem to want anything to do with it. So I don't really know how many guys on this team Farrell really has. Like, how many guys do you think that he can go up to and really, like, try to put a talking to that will actually care? I don't think the list is long.
Like in terms of like allies, or in terms of like, I can mold this young mind.
When Torrey went to talk to people, it seems like they really cared and they really took something from it. How many times when Farrell comes up, do they really give a shit deep down? I don't think many guys in this team care.
I can't think of one. I can't think of one. Maybe Devers, cause he doesn't know any better at this point, but
yeah, probably that's it.
John Farrell is not popular with the younger guys. And I mean, if you read between the lines, he's not really popular with the veterans either. You know, like the whole manager John thing. And I'm sure that there's something to that. And with Dustin Pedroia, there's a disconnect, obviously, with the Manny Machado. It's not me, it's them type deal. Like, he's talking about Farrell, you know, he's talking about the guys that are throwing at the batters. Yeah. I think when you think about it, how many guys could John Farrell go up to, throw his arm around, and be like, listen, kid, I gotta tell you something about the old times. Maybe you can learn something about the old times back in the Cleveland days. No one's going to give a fuck. No one's be like, all right, Steelcock, let's hear a story. Like, no one, they're just like, get the fuck away from me. Like, say what you got to say. And the other thing too with Mookie, like, you talk about the body language. A lot of that, I mean, in addition to just not liking John Farrell, I don't know that he doesn't like John Farrell. I'm assuming because a lot of the young guys don't. But in terms of body language, he's been fucking terrible for like, and no one wants to say it because he's Mookie and it's fun and he was the MVP runner up last year, but he's been fucking bad this year. Like not like bad by his standards. I mean, if you had, if it was like Daniel Nava, you'll take those numbers. Like you would expect those numbers from like a Daniel Nava type player, but from Mookie Betts, that's not like the season that you would expect from him. And for some reason, I feel like it goes back to the same thing about talking about the record and talking about the team's performance during this sample size. No one wants to say anything bad about the Red Sox because, well, they're still in first place and keep the faith, damn it. And with Mookie Betts, you can't say that he's on a terrible stretch right now. I think it's been almost a month where he's hitting under 200. But you can't say that because he's a good player. We know he's a good player, but can you at least point out that he's had a very disappointing season? Like, is that allowed?
Mookie gets a pass. Maybe I might be, you know, I might have given him a pass too. I don't know why. Maybe he's just a very likable guy, and I totally get that aspect of it. Since August 1st, he's hitting 218. The guy that was the runner-up for MVP is hitting 218 in the last month plus with one home run in that stretch. The fact he has one ding-dong since the beginning of August is a huge red flag, but yet we still don't really talk about it much. I had tweeted about it yesterday about his stats comparison from last year to this year and how much of a drop off there is.
No, and I did do that.
I did get some of that feedback where it's like, but we need him in the field and he's great in the clubhouse. And it's like, guys, what are we making excuses for? He hasn't just done, you know, perform poorly for him. He's performed poorly. It's just poorly now. It's not poorly for Mookie. Yeah. It's just poor. And that is very worrisome.
His last 22 games, he's hitting 198 with a 576 OPS.
That's abysmal for home anyone. Runs. That's miserable for any, for Brock Holt, for Sui Lin.
Six RBIs. Six. And guess what the Red Sox record is during that stretch?
Probably around 500.
11-11, Steve. Good job.
There you go.
They're 11-11. When Mookie Betts goes, this team usually goes. And, you know, when he's leading off and he's hitting, that's a huge boost for this lineup. When he's hitting third or fourth and he's blasting home runs, that's a huge boost for this lineup. When he's doing literally fucking nothing, look what happens. Look what happens.
Especially,
so I think,
dude, especially when he can have games of six RBIs. You see, he's gone that whole stretch with six. That's
he can do that in Baltimore in one fucking night. He can't do that in 1 month, I guess, with the Red Sox. And the same thing goes with Hanley and Bogarts. Literally, pretty much everyone except for Mitch Moreland and Andrew Benintendi. Everyone else has been a huge disappointment over this stretch here. You go around the I would also include Christian Vasquez, who doesn't really play every day, but when he does get his opportunities, he does hit. And Jackie Bradley Jr., who's been hurt, but when he's been healthy, he's been able to hit. Everyone else, what the fuck? You know, you look at what you'd at the beginning of the year, what you'd expect from that player, and then you look at what they're doing right now. Is anybody name one player on this team from an offensive standpoint that's having a standout season? One guy.
Nobody. Absolutely nobody. One of the biggest things that sticks out for me is there's not like a single guy on this roster that opposing teams and fans are going to count their fingers in terms of like how many outs until they're up. Like, I'm scared that insert name here is up. The Red Sox have zero of those guys. And you want to make a playoff run. You want to even make the playoffs with zero of those guys? Good luck. Honestly, the Yankees, when Judge isn't going good, basically it's just Gary Sanchez. I can't remember this quote-unquote rivalry with the Yankees and the Red Sox having one like guy, and that's kind of where we're at right now, which is crazy.
And it's been a long time. And that was the other thing too, is that the Red Sox do not have a guy who you're supposed to fear in this line. I mean, it's supposed to be Hanley, and beyond that, it's supposed to be Mookie. No one fears those guys. They're literally back to back in OPS. Hanley, I think, is 100th in the majors in OPS, and Mookie is 99th. Like, I don't fear those numbers. But you started with Manny in 2001, and then David Ortiz comes in 2003, And then it just becomes David in 2008. And he's been here ever since. This is the first year without David. And now what do you have? You don't have a feared hitter in that lineup. Before we get into the next topic, though, I was at the game on Sunday night. And fucking Aaron Judge hits that home run. And that little rat fuck Hubs comes up to my section and puts a camera in my face. And it's like, dude, Aaron Judge just hit a home run to make it a 7-2 game, a 9-2 game. Like, that's your hero, the guy that fucking hits clutch home runs in fucking 5-run baseball games. Like, that's your guy. And he sucks against the Red Sox. Like, that's his, if you even want to count that as a big hit, which I don't, that's like his first big hit against the Red Sox. Like, he's fucking hitting like under 200 against the Red Sox. He's a bum.
That was a hit. That wasn't a big hit. That was a hit.
It was a hit. It was a home run that went really far. And it was literally when the game was already out of hand. So
yeah, I mean, that was like it was like a nail like in the coffin. It didn't fucking,
yeah,
it didn't, yeah, that's, kill them.
Yeah. Basically. They were already dead and you just killed them even more. Congratulations. And that was like, the stadium is shaking. Oh, Yankee Stadium, Aaron Judge. Like, shut up, dude. It's literally a home run during garbage time. That's what that was. Congratulations for your garbage time home run.
It conveniently came like 3 minutes after I tweeted, haven't seen Aaron Judge do a single fucking thing since the All-Star break. And yeah, fucking there he goes. It's a 500-foot home run.
Yeah. But so, that's pretty much, that's, I don't know. I'm whatever. I'm not an Aaron Judge hater, but that reaction to that home run was preposterous. Like, the game was over and he hit a home run. Congrats.
Well, I mean, Yankees fans have been waiting for him to do something since July. So there you go.
Yeah, there it is. Congrats on your fucking meaningless home run. CC Sabathia had some comments. Do we actually have that audio?
Yeah, we'll play the audio now.
Just kind of weak to me. It just is what it is. Just shows what they got over there.
Do you think some of the adrenaline that you may have picked up after the bunt might have fueled you the rest of the way?
Big time. Yeah, for sure.
How does that affect you when you're on the mound?
It just gets you fired up. I mean, you know, it makes me want to beat them. I mean, obviously, I want to win. You know, every time I go out there, but just even more so after that.
He looks almost like a sign of disrespect towards you, or is there one specific?
Too much respect. Scary. Let's go. Let's play. Swing the bat.
All right. So Sabathia is upset with Eduardo Nunez dropping down a bunt. And he said, just play baseball, pretty much. He's like, yeah, this isn't bunting. That's not baseball. Blah, 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 blah. You're just fat, dude. Like, you're fat. That's why you don't want people bunting, because you don't want to have to get your fat ass off the mound. And honestly, thank God for Jim Rice, because, I mean, the Nesson broadcast, do we have that audio too?
We'll play that. Yeah. This is the money audio right here.
What is he talking about? Bunting is part of the game. You try to get on the base any way you can. If you tell him to leave some of that chicken, that donuts, and that burger away, maybe his leg will be okay that he can feel that baseball. So that just...
You fired up.
Yeah, that's just stupid.
So there's nothing wrong with Nunez bunting in that situation?
No, not at all.
So Sabathia doesn't have a right to be upset?
No, not at all. No. What he has a right to do is fulfill his contract, lose some weight, and go out there and pitch.
So Jim Rice, thank God for you, my friend, because the Nesson analysts usually don't like come in hot like this. Like Eckersley, yes. Sometimes Lyons will. This was a very surprising take from Jim Rice, because he's usually very tame. It's not like that's just, I'm sure he wants to say things like this all the time, but it's good to know that that's sitting down inside of him. The fact that, yeah, why don't you fucking lose some weight, pal? Maybe you won't have to complain about bunts.
Couldn't you picture the control room like, cut his mic, cut it. No, don't, Jim, stop. Don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Rice, that's coming from a Hall of Famer. I mean, goddamn, it took him 14 years to get in there, but that is a Hall of Famer that is saying that. And I'm sure he's not alone. If Jim Rice is saying that on the TV, how many other like baseball players, either active or retired or Hall of Famers or not, are looking at Sabathia's comments being like, you fat piece of shit, you're going to cry about a guy bunting off of you? Like, that's what's going to take you off the rails in your start is a guy bunting. And not only that, but didn't like Chase Headley bunt the next night and like Didi Gregorius bunted the night after that? It's like, are you going to yell at them for bunting?
And
like,
CC was clapping in the dugout when they did that.
In the dugout.
Yeah, you little bitch. He's clapping the dugout.
Yeah. He's such a fucking loser, that guy. But yeah, I you know, you look at the postseason, and right now, a lot of this is up in the air. You know, before we were looking at maybe a matchup with Cleveland. Things can change, and they probably will change. You know, we don't know what the first round matchup is going to be, or if the Red Sox are going to have to play in a wild card game or not, or if they're even going to make the postseason. That's also a possible reality that we have to face here in the coming weeks. We don't know. If you were to ask me, I'm not going to answer that question because I seem to jinx everything. I am a jinx. Anything that I say, that just the opposite happens. So I'm not going to say anything about what I think is going to happen.
Just had one quick thing on CeCe. It was just that one bunt by Nunez, right? It wasn't like they were dropping a bunch of bunts down.
No, that was it. One bunt. Everybody
what
knows the rules.
Hell, man. Like, what a weird-ass reaction. It was off of one Nunez bunt? Unless he had a thing with Nunez. Yeah,
it wasn't like he was throwing a no-hitter or anything.
I know. It was early in the game. Like, you're fat. Like, people are going to bunt on you. What are you?
Yeah, I mean, if it was like a no-hitter or a perfect game or something like that, then it's like, yeah, it's not great. But it's also in the middle of a pennant race. So if it's right. If it's a close game and you're trying to get like runners on base any way you can, you know, if it's 7-0 and it's a no hitter and a perfect game and you're dropping down bunts, then that's shady. But if it's 0-0, 1-0, 2-0, whatever, and it's a no hitter or a perfect game and you're dropping down bunts in like the fourth or the fifth inning, and it's not like the ninth or the eighth, then yeah, that's you're well within you bunt whatever the fuck you want. It's baseball. Bunting is baseball. If you're an athlete and not a fat fucking piece of shit, then you'd be able to field a bunt. Take the free out, because that's what a bunt is. I'm glad that Jim Rice really told it like it is, because that is absurd that you would have that take. Like, don't bunt on me, because just try and get a hit instead. Try and do the more difficult thing. Come on.
I'm sick of pitchers trying to dictate how hitters should act. Like, you guys are going up against each other. Stop fucking trying to tell hitters, like, oh, he hit it too far and then he pimped it. I don't like that. Oh, he bunted it down. I don't like that. Just swing and try to get a hit off me. But if you do it, don't be mean about it. Be nice. Be nice to me. I'm trying my hardest.
That kind of is how pitchers are. Like, they can do whatever they want, though. If they strike you out, they can fucking pump their fists and scream and shit.
Right.
But it's like, respect the unwritten rules of the game, man.
Pitchers are the fucking biggest pussies in sports. They're the most sensitive, biggest babies in all of sports. Yeah. Major league pitchers.
They think that they control the game. And, you know, the unwritten rules of the game were definitely written by a pitcher. There's no doubt in my mind.
Did you see Trevor Bauer on Monday when he told the guy to, like, get back in the box and he was walking out and they struck him out? And he's like, go to the dugout now. That's exactly what it is. Pitchers are like, I'm going to control this entire game. You will listen to me. Yes.
Yeah. I guess what happened was it was Abisail Garcia. And he like made a comment, like, you know, Bauer, I guess he was saying like, they only throw me breaking pitches, or like they only throw me fastballs or something like that. He was complaining about like what the like pitches were. And he threw him like a curveball. He swung and missed. And then he threw him a fastball and he fouled it off. And like, as he was doing that, he was like nodding and saying like, yeah, like I'm going to get the next one. And then Bauer struck him out and he was like, that's strike three, get back to the dugout. He's like, the rule, and he was saying like the rules of baseball is like, we can actually throw whatever pitch we want at you and you can't like complain about what pitches we throw at you. And by the way, there's also like four balls and three strikes and you just struck out. So there's the dugout, go sit in it.
Bauer's an interesting dude. I wouldn't have him in like any fight. So it's nice. It's cute for him to chirp on the mound, but like he wouldn't win any fight.
Yeah.
Wants a fight to a
So our boy, Joey McFly, this fucking guy, we had him on the podcast after he went viral. Shout out to the Section 10 Twitter account. He basically was just on ESPN, I guess. I was at the game, so I didn't see this. I just saw the stills on Twitter. But he now has merch. He's wearing a hat that has a picture of his own shocked face on it, and he's at the game on ESPN. ESPN is showing him. When I saw people tweeting me being like, yo, the McFly guy is on TV, like, I thought that, like, fucking whoever was, like, up there interviewing him about his video.
They did, like, a full-ass segment on Josie McFly. Basically, like, they had pre-rolled footage from, like, before the game. They were showed him, like, three or four times sitting in his seats with his buddies. Like, they spent a good 5 to 10 minutes on him during the inning.
Like, that just, like, goes to show you nowadays with the internet and Twitter and things that go viral, that all you need is a fucking cell phone with a camera on it, and next thing you know, you have fucking, like, tons of YouTube subscribers, Twitter followers, merch, and a spot on ESPN during their most prominent baseball broadcast, Sunday Night Baseball, all from just Rafael Devers hitting a home run and you being really surprised by it. And to get all of that just from something so small, like, that to me is a very confusing process.
Oh, yeah, it 100% is a confusing process, much like buying tickets online for sports and concerts, because you know what?
Right.
That's been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek, they're different. They've come along and they've created an amazing app and a website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. We use SeatGeek all the time. It's always the first place that we go to when we're looking for tickets to a game or a concert. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. They do all the price comparisons for you. They search multiple ticket sites and ensure that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work and you save time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best part of all is that all of this is that our listeners get an instant $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So all you got to do to get that is download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code. The promo code is section 10. That's all one word, a 10 at the end. SeatGeek will give you an instant $20 rebate off your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code section 10 today.
Big coupon, bitch. One quick thing with Joey McFly. It wasn't just like an inning or so. It felt like the rest of the game. Once they introduced Joey in like the third, it was basically every ish inning they would kind of show him. They ended up showing his reaction to the Judge home run during the broadcast. And they also show him meeting Devers, having Devers sign a hat with his face on the hat. I could not believe we're in a point now where Devers hits a home run. It was, what, 103-mile-an-hour fastball. And we just have some fan that no one knew that now, what, 3 weeks later is getting a hat with his face on it signed by the guy that hit the home run because we tweeted out his reaction to the home run. I couldn't wrap. Yeah. Like, that's a confusing process. That's the definition of a confusing process. Like, no one could have seen that coming. And not to be like too, you know, circled around us, but do you think any of this happens if we don't tweet that out?
No. I mean, like, that's what made it go viral.
Somebody would have found it though.
But I mean, to have it
too good,
the timing,
it would have seen somebody's eyes who would have shared it.
But like the timeline, like, we shared it that night and it was kind of late. So like
when I shared it, it had like 3 retweets. I don't know if this guy would have gotten that. And I love Joey, but I don't know if he would have gotten to this level.
Yeah. Cause like the next day, like it's not as funny the next day. People were excited about the game, about the home run that night. And it goes out that night. I'm not sure that it goes viral the next day after everyone's just like, all right, we're on to the next game now. It's over. Know what I'm saying?
I think it would have. It was too good. And it's in like the middle of baseball season. There's nothing else going on. People are starved for content. It would have found its way to the interwebs and gone around. Maybe it wouldn't have been as popular were as wildfire viral, but I do think that he would have done it. It was too good to miss out.
Maybe. It's kind of like the Tigers kid. Do you see the Tigers kid on Starting Nine?
That was hilarious. That was really funny.
Yeah,
that,
like the dancing kid.
No. It's the kid that was ranting about Michael Fulmer, and he literally just like lost his fucking mind in a rant. And that had like, I don't know, maybe 30 retweets by the time we got to it, and then we put it on the show and we tweeted it out, and it was like thousands after that.
It's all about aiding the content. Once you have the content, and then it's like, all right, we're the ones that are going to bring you to the promised land. But my favorite part of that Tigers fan reaction is when he got the player of the game in at the end.
Yeah. what did he say? Matuk.
Matuk, player of the game, but fuck! What are we doing out there? Like, he had to get the player of the game
God
there.
God damn it!
Fulmer's injured!
So, Steve, you can feel my pain here on this. With being stuck in New York, having to watch the games on the YES Network. And I noticed this. I'm pretty sure the Red Sox play the Yankees one of the first weeks that I was here. And I found it very amusing. And I'm sure that like Yankee fans are just used to it and they just accept it. But like the first time that I noticed it, Aaron Judge was up, and it was when people were first really starting to notice that he was slumping in the second half big time. And they were saying something like, yeah, well, you know, he went to the All-Star game. And like, people were blaming the Home Run Derby. And then they were making excuses like, well, when he went to the All-Star game, like, he got a lot of media attention, and that's just, it weighs a lot on a guy. And I was like, so he sucks the second week into August because he answered questions in the first or second week of July? Like, that's what we're going with here?
Also, he's the best player, had a monster first half and was considered the best player on the New York Yankees, which is like the most historic team in baseball in one of the biggest markets in all of sports. So like, if you're going to fucking going to pin that on a couple questions at All-Star weekend or All-Star break in July, fucking kidding me?
Yeah. It was weird. It was a weird call. And then I think it was like earlier in this past series, maybe the Thursday game or maybe the Friday game. I'm not sure which one it was. But Judge like popped out or something. And they were like breaking down his swing about how it was like almost a home run. They're like, oh, the launch angle. If the launch angle was like a couple of degrees more this way with the exit velocity on that swing, like that would have been a home run. So that's how you know the swing is coming. He's almost back. He's like, it's just like, didn't know. He just flew out.
Who's the YES main guy that goes, it is high, it is far? Who is that?
That's John Sterling on the radio.
That's the radio, but
Sterling, yeah.
Who's the broadcaster that has like a name?
The CIA guy, Michael K. That's Michael K. He's the one that goes, see ya, rah! And the radio guy, it is gone.
Bomb
from A-Rod, and the Yankees take a 2-1 lead.
I was in Connecticut on Saturday, so I was listening to the game on the radio for the Yankees broadcast, and man, that broadcast is a real piece of shit. It is so bad. It's kind of hilarious.
Susan Waldman is on the radio too.
Oh, she's like, God.
That Roger Clemens is in the owner's box. Roger Clemens is in Steinbrenner's box.
Of all the dramatic things, John, he's in his box.
Roger Clemens is in George's box, and Roger Clemens is coming back. Oh, my goodness gracious. Of all the dramatic things I've ever seen, Roger Clemens standing right in George Steinbrenner's box announcing he is back. Roger Clemens is a New York Yankee.
It's hilarious. Least, just like, thinking about that.
If you don't like Nesson, at least you can turn on EEI and listen to Joe Castiglione. It's a nice little escape if you're not a big Dave O'Brien guy. But here in New York, if you want to listen to the game, don't.
It wasn't even just Judge. It wasn't even just Judge. I remember in the it was the third inning, and they were like, "And guys, this is the first tough inning that Sonny Gray has seen all night." It's the third inning. He's not even through like the lineup yet, and you're talking about this is really the first trouble he's run into. It's the third inning. Jesus.
Yeah, there. I mean, and then I had like Yankee fans chirping me, be like, "Oh yeah, because the Nesson broadcast isn't like all team friendly." I was like, "We just had a guy almost fight a guy because he like is too outspoken against the team." Like, that's where we're at here at Nesson. And I'm like, there's a lot of fluff going on at Nesson. There's a lot of guys that like won't say something negative about the team at all, and that's kind of what they want, which is why they, you know, since the Eckersley incident, they've trotted out Gomes, Salty, Lenny DiNardo, fucking Todd Walker was in there last night.
Oh my god, that was unbelievable. I never thought I'd see that guy's face in my life ever again.
Mike Timlin, all these guys are just like totally just like rah-rah team guys. Like, yeah, Nesson is totally has that reputation. And like, you know, Salty was in there in like an 11-1 game being like, "Well, you know, they could string some hits together and you never know what could happen. You know, you could get some hits here and you got a ball game."
I'm starting to adopt the don't hate the player, hate the game. Like, a lot of people on Twitter are ripping Lenny DiNardo. I obviously included would rip like Timlin and Celta Gabaguzzi. But let's start to realize this is a Nesson thing. This isn't the guys they're putting in there. If you get told or, you know, if you get asked, "You want to call the Red Sox game for Nesson on TV?" You're going to say no? No. A lot of those guys want to do that. And they'll say yes. It's Nesson. They need to not be putting these guys in positions to fail. When Lenny DiNardo was in there last night, I wanted to fall asleep. Like, that was really tough. But I'm not hating on the player. I honestly, this is now a Nesson thing where they can't possibly expect this to go well. You couldn't have thought Lenny DiNardo was going to change things up in the booth. Come on now.
Yeah, it's they definitely, they want to get younger. They want to get more exciting, I guess. And they've definitely trotted out a cast that has done the opposite of that, which is, I don't know. I don't know what they're going for, but obviously they're not going for hard hitting hot takes, which is not what fans want anyway. But I mean, definitely more than, you know, just a lot of rah rah action going on, especially when the team is performing as poorly as they have been. But yeah, that's just weird. If you're watching, yes, out here, and a lot of Red Sox fans like, "Yeah, I've been stuck out here for years, and I've been subject to this broadcast, and it's fucking comical how blatant the just excuse making is." And it's like, oh my god, they're talking about launch angles and how it was almost a hit. It's like, it wasn't. He flew out. He's out. It doesn't count. So they don't mark that down as an almost hit in the scorebook. That's not how it works.
Yeah, homers everywhere. Homers are, "I need more X. I need more call it as I see it." Even for road players, when he's like, "I got to have that." He doesn't just say, "I got to have that for Red Sox guys." He says it for everybody. So I need more people that are like, "That's a tough call." It's like, not everything needs to go the Yankees way or the Red Sox way, depending what you're watching it on.
Almost batting average is not a PD Analytics approved stat. So you can't use it.
Back to the drawing board for the Yes Network in terms of almost getting hits. So the Red Sox have 24 games left on their schedule. They have a 2.5 game lead in the division. They're currently on a 9-game homestand. I believe their schedule, they have, including this series, it's like 6 games against Toronto. They've got 6 games against Tampa. They have 3 against Cincinnati. 3 against Oakland, and they close the season with 4 against Houston, and then they also have to go to Baltimore. So the Houston and Baltimore series will be pretty tough, but an otherwise should be relatively easy schedule to close out the month, which is why I'm sort of optimistic about them holding on to a division lead. But at the same time, it just reminds me too much of last year where, you know, they hung on to the division lead, and once they won, they kind of just like coasted in and got their dicks kicked in by the Indians. If you're the Red Sox, you see this easy schedule, not really a battle test type schedule. If you're a fan, how are you feeling about the Red Sox to finish out the month of September. And let's just say that their first round opponent is the Cleveland Indians, who, by the way, at the time of recording this, have won 12 straight games. By the way, 12 straight games. And not only that, here's the kicker with Cleveland. They've won 12 straight games without Andrew Miller, without Michael Brantley, without Jason Kipnis, and without Danny Salazar. So just, yeah, we're the best team in the league. And also we did it without a lot of our best players. So once we get those back, we'll be even better. See you in October.
The Indians are really good at being great without their full team. They're like, you guys want Lindor? Hey, DL, you want Lindor? We'll give you Lindor. We don't even need him. We can win this World Series without him. So the Indians are a monster. They're an absolute monster right now. 12-game winning streak as we're recording. Longest in the majors this season. Very concerned about them. Also concerned about potentially going to Houston in the first round. But we are getting ahead of ourselves. The Sox have a 2.5-game lead in the American League East. Like, that is a nightmare. It's something that could have easily been 5.5, could have easily been 7.5, like we predicted. Ends up being 3.5 after the series. I'm most concerned, honestly, right now. I won't say it. I won't tweet it. I can say it now. I'm most concerned about them not folding in the American League East, which would be a nightmare. The Yankees are not that impressive, but the Red Sox are just that shitty right now.
I'm kind of hesitant to worry about them in the division right now, just because of how easy the schedule is down the stretch. And I think they'll be able to piece something together over the final month. I think that they'll be able to hold on to it. But as far as like a playoff matchups go, not great. I'm not very optimistic. You either get the Indians. I think if they get the Indians, they're going to lose in like 3 or 4 again. And if now you look at Houston, which wasn't like, I wasn't terrified of Houston before, but now they get Verlander, and that's going to be difficult. They're going to get fucking smoked in that series too, probably.
Yeah, it's there's no easy road to the World Series for this Red Sox team. And if you're, I feel like if you're Houston or you're Cleveland, you've got to be looking at the Red Sox being like, yeah, we want them in the first round. Like that's not a good feeling as a Red Sox fan to be the preferred first round matchup. And I feel like that's honestly what they must be feeling. Like, you can't, if you're Houston, or I mean, you definitely don't want the Yankees. Like, if they somehow, you know, in the wild card, if they beat Minnesota or Baltimore, I mean, even Baltimore to a certain extent is a team that, if I'm Houston or Cleveland, like, what team do you want to match up with in the first round? Is it the red hot Orioles? Is it the red hot Yankees? Is it the red hot Indians? Like, you don't want those teams. You want the Red Sox because they are playing the worst out of all of the postseason contenders right now.
But I do think that, like, there's a certain fear to knowing that you have to go up against Chris Sale in a 5-game series. I know that the Sox are playing like shit.
Unless you're Cleveland.
I still think if you have a choice with the Sox or the Yankees or the Sox or Baltimore, you're going to fucking pick the Yankees or Baltimore because you don't have to deal with the pitching.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's just, you could also make the case that, you know, if you're Cleveland, you want Chris Sale because you know how well you performed against him. Houston, you know, it's, you can throw Verlander against him and still have a really good chance, or Keuchel. And it's not a good spot to be in. But luckily for the Red Sox, 24 games left. There is time for them to sort of right the ship. But I just don't know what the wake-up call is going to be. I thought that losing 3 out of 4 in the Bronx and having the division lead go down to 3.5 games when they really had a chance to come out of it at least even, you know, if they won that last game to come out of there 5.5 up, that would have been something that, you know, at least you can walk away from being like, hey, we lost nothing. Like, that we wiped that 4-game series off the schedule. We lose nothing. We come out the same way we came in. But now that it's down to 2.5, which again is where they were after that Baltimore series. Only after the Baltimore series, when their lead went down to 2.5 games, they responded by sweeping the Blue Jays. Now they open up this home series against Toronto and get their fucking dicks kicked in.
I was going to say, well, that's the thing too, is that, like, not only did they drop 3 of 4 against the Yankees, they didn't look good at any point during that weekend.
No.
It's, they just,
Doug Fister pitched.
Yeah.
That was it. Dougie Pfister. Like that's,
Doug Pfister, carrying that's the
guy
team.
That's saving you from like panic time. Yeah, Doug Pfister. But it's definitely at a point right now where I wasn't so much concerned after losing 3 out of 4 in New York, but after I saw how the team responded after coming home against the last place team in Toronto, that's when I was like, huh, that doesn't make me feel good.
Figure
like,
it out.
That's yeah. Cause I mean, like I said, they responded with, you know, a sweep of the Blue Jays after that, you know, getting swept the players weekend at Fenway against Baltimore, but 3 out of 4 against New York, come back, get fucking beat up on by the Blue Jays at home. So we'll see what happens tonight. As we're recording this, it's Tuesday morning. So we'll see how the rest of the series goes. They could easily, you know, take the next two. The Yankees could drop the next two. It's 4.5 and you're feeling fine again. And that's just in a 2-day span. So a lot of things can happen over these last 3 or 4 weeks of the season. And the Section 10 podcast will have you covered every step of the way, 2 episodes every single week, as we've been doing all season long. We'll be here for better or for worse. And how many people last night on Starting Nine, the Monday episode of Starting Nine, we didn't talk about Red Sox Yankees because like a bunch of stuff happened, and it wasn't even like that happened on Sunday, and it's the Monday show. Like we were talking about Monday shit. And it was like, oh, you're just going to duck the Red Sox and Yankees ball. Yeah, because I don't have like fucking 30 other podcasts that I could talk about the Red Sox and the Yankees on. And I blogged it that morning. Like I'm not ducking the fact that the Red Sox only have a 2.5 game lead. So there you have it. That's our fucking postmortem Red Sox Yankees series show. Do you have any closing thoughts here? How are you feeling about the rest of the way here? You feeling good?
Not feeling good, but I'm not in panic mode yet.
Yeah, me neither.
Not in full panic mode.
I'm not in panic mode.
I do want to say a quick little RIP condolences to the family of RDT as he was murdered brutally by Kevin Durant over the weekend.
I did see that. It was a very vicious attack. So vicious, in fact, that I had to retweet all of Kevin Durant's responses.
I will say it's funny to see RDT get smashed by one of the best basketball players in the world. But Kevin Durant has got to work on his comeback game because those are some pretty shitty comebacks.
Yeah. You always say like your mother.
And he's like, bro, I don't know you. Like if you're going to be the guy that goes at people on Twitter and like, he's like a quote unquote savage on Twitter, at least have some A+ responses in your back pocket to use.
Yeah. Or maybe that's just his gimmick, is that he just has shitty responses, but he can still dunk on you anyway.
Yeah, true.
Like that's an untapped market. The like, shitty comeback
almost,
market.
It's almost worse for like RDT because you know that Kevin Durant didn't give his best effort, and yet everybody is saying that he still murdered you.
I mean, you can't, it's very, very hard to win a Twitter battle against Kevin Durant. Just the fact that he even responded to you means you lost.
Yeah. Sheer numbers, you're not winning the battle.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to win a Twitter battle against a guy like Kevin Durant. That's it for us. We'll be back on Thursday. We want to say thanks to our producer, Steve Peralt. You can check him out on Twitter @Steve_Peralt. You can follow the show on Twitter @Section10Pod. Also on Instagram @Section10Podcast. You can follow PD Analytics on Twitter @PeteBlackburn. The archive for the Section 10 podcast can be found at section10podcast.com. Subscribe on iTunes, rate the show, leave a review. And if you do, you can be eligible for the review of the week, which we do every Thursday. Tell a friend about the show. It really helps us out a lot if you, especially now where, you know, yeah, football season's starting, and I know you're probably fucking, oh, my fantasy football team, oh, I got to watch every fucking game. I can't just watch my team. I got to watch all the teams because of my fantasy team. All right, cool, dude. But guess what? It's the most exciting month of the year when it comes to baseball that isn't the postseason. The Red Sox are in it. Kind of. They're trying. I don't even know if they're trying. They're in it. They're there. They are present. They are in attendance. So we will be talking about those games. So if you know some baseball fans, some Red Sox fans, why don't you tell them about the Section 10 podcast? Because things are about to be heating up. over here on this bitch. You can check out our sponsor, SeatGeek. You download the SeatGeek app, you use the promo code Section10, and guess what? You get $20 off of your first purchase right there on the app. You want to go to Fenway Fridays, you want to go see the Red Sox, maybe win a baseball game. You download the SeatGeek app, you put in the promo code Section10. That takes $20 off of your first purchase for whatever tickets you want to buy. Choose wisely. I would say, to be honest, wait a little while if you want to go see the Red Sox. Like, wait for them to, like, maybe be good again.
Just get your 2018 tickets. It's fine.
Any last words, Peter?
I just want to say one thing real quick. I wouldn't want to cuff you. The girl, you should know that I can't love.
Sleep in it, pop the hose in. If you're getting cold feet, I make the snow sing. I'ma rest in peace in it, pop a toe tag. Pull up on it in the Uber, that's how I maneuver. Turn the Z into a D plus and I'm a two.
Slugging Nesquiks.
Gonna need more enthusiasm than that, Pete. Here we go.
All right. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's it. We're done.
She got a man, but she says she really like me. She doing things to excite me.